Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Thari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Thari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraj Kacharya Ushto Tarashto Shishya Marishi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Go Premanandi Hari Go Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai All grace to the assembled devotees All grace to the assembled devotees All grace to the assembled devotees All grace to Sri Sri Guru Gaurango. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 11, Summary description of the Maha Purusha, texts 5 through 12. Text 5, word meanings. Maya Ajay, beginning with the unmanifest stage of nature. Navabhi, with the nine Tattvatai elements. Saha, that. Vikara Maya, also comprising the transformations of the 11 senses and the 5 gross elements. Virat, the universal form of the Lord. Nirmita, constructed. Drishyate, are seen. Yatra, in which. Sa Chitke, being conscious. Bhuvanatrayam, the 3 planetary systems. Maya jana bhavistatvai. Savikara mayo virat. Nirmito drishyate yatra. Sachitke bhuvanatrayam. Maya jana bhavistatvai. Savikara mayo virat. Nirmito drishyate yatra. Sachitke bhuvanatrayam. Maya jana bhavistatvai. Savikara mayo virat. Nirmito drishyate yatra. Sachitke bhuvanatrayam. Translation. The universal form, Virat, of the personality of Godhead includes the 9 basic elements of creation, starting with the unmanifest nature and their subsequent transformations. Once this universal form is instilled with consciousness, the 3 planetary systems become visible within it. Report. the nine basic elements of creation are Prakriti, Sutra, Mahatattva, false ego, and the five subtle perceptions. The transformations are the 11 senses and the five gross material elements. We can chant together the other verses. Six through eight. Etadvai paurusham rupam bhupadadhyasthiro nabha nabhi suryokini nase vayu karna disha prabho prajapati prajananam apano mrityur isitu padbhavo lokapala manaschandro bhuvo yama Lajjataro dharo labho Dandha jusna smayo brahma Ramani bhuva bhumna omega purusha murdhaja. This is the representation of the Supreme Lord as the Universal Person. In which the earth is his feet, the sky his navel, the sun his eyes, wind his nostrils, the demigod of procreation his genitals, death his anus, and the moon his mind. The heavenly planets are his head, the directions his ears, and the demigods protecting the various planets his many arms. The god of death is his eyebrows, shame his lower lip, greed his upper lip, delusion his smile, and moonshine his teeth, while the trees are the almighty Purusha's bodily hairs, and the clouds the hair on his head. Purport. Various aspects of material creation, such as the earth, the sun, and the trees, are sustained by various limbs of the universal body of the Lord. Thus they are considered non-different from him, as described in this verse, which is meant for meditation. Text 9. Yavanayam vaipurusho yavatya samstaya mita Havanasavati Mahapurusho Loka Sansaya. Just as one can determine the dimensions of an ordinary person of this world by measuring his various limbs, one can determine the dimensions of the Mahapurusha by measuring the arrangement of the planetary systems within his universal form. Text 10. Kaustubha vyapadeshena svatma jyotirbhartyaja tatprabha vyapini sakshat trivatsam urusa vibhu. Upon his chest, the almighty unborn personality of Godhead bears the Kaustubha gem, which represents the pure spirit soul, along with the Srivatsa mark, which is the direct manifestation of this gem's expansive effulgence. Texts 11 and 12. Swamayam vanamalakyam nanaguna mayim dadhat vashaschando mayam pitam brahmasutram trivritswaram Vivartit Sankhyam Yogam Cha Devo Makara Kundale Maurim Padam Paramishyam Sarvaloka Bhayankaram. His flower garland is his material energy, comprising various combinations of the modes of nature. His yellow garment is the Vedic meters, and his sacred thread, the syllable Om, composed of three sounds. In the form of his two shark heart-shaped earrings, the Lord carries the processes of Sankhya and Yoga, and his crown, bestowing fearlessness on the inhabitants of all the worlds, is the supreme position of Brahmaloka. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya Vikshuvan Meditamena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah. It's interesting that we've done the 10th canto, which is the Ashraya. We've worked our way all the way up to Krishna. Now we seem to be going backwards, studying the universal form now. So this is a difficult chapter, I find, to understand what's going on here. First is something about this word Mahapurusha. Of course, the word just means the great person. So it can be applied in different ways. Here we're seeing it applied to the Virat Purusha. The Virat Purusha is called the Mahapurusha. But we find in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Narada Muni goes to Brahmaloka, and then later when Gopakumara goes to Brahmaloka, they find that Lord Brahma is worshipping the Mahapurusha. And there it doesn't mean the universal form. It means one of the forms of Lord Vishnu. And that form is described as having thousands of heads and thousands of hands and thousands of arms and so on. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says this means that basically their heads and legs and hands and so on are unlimited. So there it said a thousand. Often it said a thousand, 1,000. But it means many, many heads or unlimited numbers of heads. So somehow, this is the way we could quickly get into the realm of the inconceivable. How is Lord Brahma even perceiving such a personality? But he's there, he's worshipping him. Actually, Narada Muni got there at Brahmaloka because on Indraloka, Indra is also worshipping the Lord directly because Vamanadeva is there, his brother actually. So he's able to worship him directly. And when Narada Muni glorifies him, then he sends him on to Lord Brahma. I think that's how it goes. Because he says, Lord, somehow he explains how Lord Brahma is so much, Krishna has given so much more mercy to Lord Brahma. Of course, one reason Indra says this is because, well, I kind of blew it a few times with Krishna. made some big mistakes, so I got in trouble. But Lord Brahma, he's much more exalted than I am. He's really gotten the Lord's mercy. So Narada Muni goes there and he sees that he's worshipping this form of the Mahapurusha. Now there are a couple of important verses in the Bhagavatam. They come in the context of in the 11th canto where the avatars are described, the Yuga avatars. So when the Kali Yuga avatar is described, Vishnavarnam, what is it? What's the first word? Not Krishna. Krishnavarnam. Yeah, Krishnavarnam, Krishna, Sango Pangasta Bharatam, Yagyai Sankirtana Praya, Yajanti Hisumedasa. So that describes the incarnation for Kali Yuga. Then after that, there are two verses that end with the line, Vande Mahapurushate Charanavindam. And Srila Prabhupada, the Acharyas say these verses refer to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also the Mahapurusha. In fact, Prabhupada quotes these two verses in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, first chapter, text 10. And he makes this same point. They're very wonderful verses, actually. With each line has, there's a lot of commentary by the commentators about taking apart this verse, practically word by word, and explaining. In fact, one of them, Chakya Sudustrita Surepita Raja Lakshming, that particular verse of those two, the second one, the Acharyas say that it applies to Lord Krishna, Lord Ramachandra, and to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It can be analyzed in different ways. So in any case, the Mahapurusha, this word, can apply to different personalities, including the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, there's one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Prabhupada has compiled many verses that in other scriptures that talk about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this is other scriptures and also the Bhagavatam. So here he selects these among many others. He also quotes these verses as showing this isn't the only verse that talks about Lord Chaitanya. There are other verses that talk about Lord Chaitanya. And he mentions these Mahapurusha. In fact, what Prabhupada does is that he quotes other verses from the Vedas that also just mention the word Mahapurusha, and he says this is for Lord Chaitanya. These verses are indirectly speaking about Lord Chaitanya because they mention the Mahapurusha. So this chapter in the summary, just to help get some context of what and why we're reading about the universal form of the Lord, it says here, in the beginning of in the chapter summary, it says, Sri Sutta first tells Shonaka Rishi about the material objects through which one can understand the major limbs, secondary limbs, the weapons, and garments of Lord Sri Hari. Now, what is he asking? What is Sutta Goswami? Shonaka Rishi is asking Sutta Goswami. The first verse says, therefore, we now inquire from you about the definitive conclusion of all the Tantra scriptures. Now, Sri Devi mentioned in her class the other day, basically what the Tantra scriptures are. They have to do with procedure, how to worship the Lord, basically. What you find today in spiritual circles that have to do with India, generally when they talk about Tantra, they talk about Shaiva Tantra. They're talking about Shaivite practices. And the tantrics, actually this word, the tantrics. So tantrics, some of you old-timers may remember many years ago, Achyutananda Prabhu wrote an article in BTG, I think the title of it was Can Sex Be Yoga? And he described all these tantric practices that the worshippers of Kali perform. And they're quite grotesque, actually. They're really dark kinds of practices. So often when people hear Tantra, this is what they think about. Tantric sex, even this phrase is used, Tantric sex. Because there are like manuals, and how basically the idea of this Tantra practice is it's supposed to make you stoic or detached from material existence somehow or other. So people sometimes think of Tantra that way. But Prabhupada would often refer to the Sattvata Tantras. Now, the Sattvata Tantra means devotional Tantra. And the one that he would often cite would be the Narada Pancharatra. Now, what we find in these is that there's not only just descriptions of how to do things, but there's also philosophy there. For example, in the Narada Pancharatra, we have the famous verse, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchyate. The definition of bhakti is given there. To engage the senses in the service of the owner of the senses, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. That verse comes from the Narada Pancharatra. So it comes from a tantra, from this Sattvata Tantra. Sattvata, because the devotees are Sattvata. They're Sattvata means they're existing in Sat, existing in truth, or Om Tat Sat, the Supreme Absolute Truth. That's why devotees are called Sattvatas. So the Sattvata Tantra, the Vaishnava Tantras in general are often called Sattvata Tantras. But I went through the Veda base to see other Tantras that we may not realize that they're Tantras, but they're, some of them are, various ones are quoted throughout our books. So one of those, this is not called a tantra, but it is a tantra, the Krishna Yamala and the Brahma Yamala. These are also, at least one of these, or maybe both of them, are quoted also in that purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Prabhupada quotes different verses about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So either one or both of these are quoted there. Vishnu Yamala is another one. So this Yamala. So these Yamalas apparently are a category of tantra. The Gautamiya Tantra. Now the Gautamiya Tantra contains something familiar to all of us. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya. That comes from the Gautamiya Tantra. So apparently it's spoken by or somehow related to Gautama Rishi. And then there's also the Brihad Gautamiya Tantra. Now these may be the same thing, I'm not sure. The Brihad Gautamiya Tantra and the Gautamiya Tantra. And then there's also a tantra called the Swayambhuva Tantra. Swayambhuva Manu, of course, was a great devotee of the Lord. And the Mrityunjaya Tantra, which means to conquer over death. So the question here by Shonaka Rishi is, now we inquire from you about the definitive conclusion of all tantra scriptures. So then he carries on his question. Please explain to us who are very eager to learn the process of Kriya Yoga, which is, so Kriya means to act. So it means devotional service, bhakti yoga, to act in the service of the Lord. Practice through regulated worship of the transcendental Lord, the husband of the goddess of fortune. So you think here, he's asking about Lord Vishnu, one would think, by the question. Please also explain how the Lord's devotees conceive of his limbs. Now, four things are mentioned here. These are also mentioned in the chapter summary. He specifically mentions four things that he's in, how the Lord's devotees conceive of his limbs, associates, weapons, and ornaments. So the limbs are the angas, and the associates, or it's in, I think in the, yes, in the chapter summary, it says the secondary limbs. So for somehow the limbs, the secondary limbs are considered his associates. And the Sanskrit for that is upanga. So you have the angas and upangas are being asked about. And then his weapons and ornaments. In terms of their particular material representations. So this seems to be the clue to why the Virat Rupa is being described. He's asking about how do the devotees conceive of them in terms of their material representation. So if, apropos of this, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, of course we tend to think, I'll talk a little bit more about this, that the meditation on the Virat Rupa, and Prabhupada would often say, is for those who are completely materialistic. They can't see transcendentally. So we tend to think it's a lower kind of meditation. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, the devotees, when they hear this, they think of the Lord's Satchidananda limbs. They think of the Lord's transcendental body and the Lord's transcendental limbs. So even though we may conceive, you know, the, all these, some of the things that we read today are the descriptions of the Lord, that we may think of Krishna. Naturally, we think of Krishna's form and Krishna's limbs, or Lord Vishnu's form and Vishnu's limbs. But so anyway, the question here is about specifically how the devotees conceive of these things in reference to the material world. And then the last line here is, by expertly worshipping the Lord, a mortal can attain immortality. It's interesting to play with on the words here. Immortal, we're mortals. It means we die, but we can become immortal. Actually, in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, the fifth canto is also a kind of meditation on the Virat Rupa. Often when I'm reading it, or hearing these verses in the fifth canto, sometimes I think, what's the point of all this? I'm just hearing about the material world. How am I going to gain anything from this? But it actually says at the beginning that you can become, you can transcend this material world by meditating on this material world and this, the way that you're directed, that even the structure of the universe, you know, you're halfway to the 10th canto and you're meditating on the structure of the universe. You think, well, how is this spiritual to meditate on the structure? But it actually says there that it is. Why? And this is why, because it's Krishna, actually. We're trained to think that don't just see it as some ordinary thing, actually extraordinary, because it's Krishna's energy. That's why in many ways when you read about the universal form comes up several times in the Bhagavatam, and it really sounds like it's a real person being described. The Virat Purusha or the Mahapurusha did this and did that. In fact, here, actually in the first verse that I read today, was it the first verse? Yes, it says, once this universal form is instilled with consciousness, the three planetary systems become visible within it. So in the third canto, when at the beginning of Maitreya's instructions to Vidura, one of the first things he does is describe the Virata Rupa, the creation of the universe, and he does it describing it like its person, the limbs of the universal form, he's describing them. And there comes a point where it's all inactive. It's like there's a body there, but it's inactive. So it's a little confusing to me because it says it's personalities, demigods, in control of these different limbs of the universal form. You wouldn't think they would have manifested yet, but somehow they're offering prayers to the Mahapurusha. And then it's the body is inert until the Mahapurusha enables it with consciousness or enters into it and gives it consciousness. Because the Lord is the consciousness or the super consciousness of the universal form, the Virat Rupa. Brahma is also the consciousness of the universal form, actually, the minute consciousness, because he's a jiva, but the universal form. So nothing happens until the Lord enters into it and gives it consciousness. So let's see. So Sutta Goswami, it says, I shall repeat to you the description, this was verse 4, of the opulences of the Lord given in the Vedas and Tantras by great authorities, beginning from the lotus-born Brahma. Then he begins, the universal form of the personality of God, at this first verse we read today, the Virat, includes 9 basic elements of creation. So he begins his description by giving this overview of what it's made out of. What is the universe made of, or the universal form? So it has these, it says, in the purport it's explained what's being described here. It says the 9 basic elements of creation are Prakriti, Sutra, Mahatattva, false ego, or Ahankar, and the 5 subtle perceptions. So these, it's interesting this is broken into. Now you may remember when we were reading in the 11th canto, Lord Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, there was one series of verses where Krishna says, well, sometimes there are great thinkers who analyze the material world with 24 elements, and some of them analyze it with 16 elements, and some of them analyze, and he said, they're all right, it's okay, because you can categorize in different ways. So this is one way that's being categorized here. So Prakriti is actually secondary, because before Prakriti is Pradhan. Pradhan means completely unmanifest material nature. And as soon, when it becomes manifest, it's called Prakriti. And then the next stage is called Sutra. Now we also, I remember I spoke on this verse actually in the 11th canto, what this Sutra was about. So I did some more, a little bit more research on it, Sutra. So we have Prakriti, Sutra, Mahatattva, Ahankar, and then the 5 subtle perceptions. That's usually what we call the objects of the senses, the 5 subtle perceptions, sound, form, touch, taste, and smell. So these are considered the 9 most basic elements, at least in this. So the sutras, I'm just going to read a few things. They're kind of related, but I looked up different references to what sutra means. So we have Prakriti, Sutra, Mahatattva. That's the way it's described here, this progression. So let's see. Here, this is from 1085.5. This is, I think, the purport. Brahma must organize the specific manifestations of creation, but he cannot begin to do so until the Lord expands himself again into the subtle energy of action, which is the sutra tattva, or original vital air, and also into the creative energy of consciousness, buddhi tattva. Now we'll see a theme that runs through this is about action. This is 11.9.20. According to great sages, that which is based on the 3 modes of material nature and which manifests the variegated universe is called the sutra or mahatattva. So we also find this, that mahatattva and sutra are used synonymously. But there's a little clarification of that. That phase of the mahatattva which manifests the chain of fruitive activities is called sutra. So it is the mahatattva, but it's the mahatattva in a particular phase. So Mahatattva apparently goes through different phases. So when activity begins, that's called sutra. Sutra, of course, means thread. Vishwanatha Chakravarti gives some reason why the word thread is used, but I don't remember. So this is also a verse, 11.24.6. So this is also in Krishna's teachings to Uddhava. From these modes arose the primeval sutra, along with the Mahatattva. So here it says, along with. By the transformation of the Mahatattva was generated the false ego, the cause of the living entity's bewilderment. Purport, according to Srila Sridhar Swami, sutra is the first transformation of material nature that manifests the potency of activity. And it is accompanied by the Mahatattva, which is endowed with the potency of knowledge. So you get the idea, you know, there are different shaktis, Dravya Shakti, Jnana Shakti, and Kriya Shakti. These three are fundamental to material nature, especially the transformation of material nature and activity or getting things done in material nature. So Dravya means the material itself, Jnana means knowledge, and Kriya means activity. So in order to get anything done, you have to have these three things. You want to do something, you want to make something, you have to have the material, you have to know how to make it, and then you have to actually do it. So these are fundamental principles of material nature. So apparently the sutra here refers to the active part, the making part. So finally, at the end of my Vedabase search, I got to the Vedabase glossary, which gives a definition of sutra. It says sutra is the intermediate manifestation of the Mahatattva, which is predominated by the mode of passion. So this makes sense, because what is passion? Passion is the active mode of material nature. Goodness or sattva. Sattva is vision, enlightenment, clarity. And rajoguna is activity. Tamas is inertia, inert, nothing happened. So you need, for things to happen, you need that mode of passion. So that's apparently what sutra is about here. So that's, again, these are these nine. Prakriti, sutra, mahatattva, false ego, and the five subtle perceptions. Those are the nine basic elements of creation. And then, because in the verse it says these nine elements and their transformations. Vikara maya. Vikara means transformation. Maya, made of. So those are the 11 senses, which of course means the 10 senses, internal, the knowledge acquiring, and the active senses, and the mind. And then the five gross material elements, panchabhuta, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So let's see, was there something else I wanted to mention here? Let me just read a little something. Oh, I know what I was going to talk about. In the second canto, because it's interesting how the second canto begins. Of course, the second canto begins Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Pariksit. The first canto ends with the meeting of Pariksit Maharaj and Shukadeva. So Pariksit asks him, "What should I do? I have 7 days left. So I'm about to die. What should I do?" So Shukadeva Goswami begins his instruction in the second canto. So he pretty much gets right to the point. First, he says people are mostly in Maya. They don't ask important questions like this. They're just absorbed in their daily routine life and their families and so on. But actually, one should hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Harinam Anukirtanam. One should chant the holy names of the Lord. That's what some person should do. One should not waste a moment. Better a moment of full consciousness than a whole wasted lifetime. He gives the example of Maharaj Katwanga, who learned that he only had one moment left, and he surrendered to the Lord, and so on. So he basically explains that life should be for bhakti yoga, Krishna consciousness. But then when he begins, you might say, a description of what one is supposed to do, more detailed, he says, once you go to a secluded place, sit down in the yoga posture, chant Om, and he goes through the whole process, and what he's talking about is Ashtanga Yoga. In fact, it's interesting, in Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this section of verses, he goes through, because it's not exactly clear to me reading the verses that he's talking about step by step Ashtanga Yoga, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, this is Yama. What he said in this verse, this is Yama, and this is Niyama, and this is Asana, and this is Pranayama, and this is Pratyahara. He goes step by step with each verse explaining how it aligns with the, and then finally Samadhi. So he's explaining, and of course, what is the Samadhi is meditation on the Supersoul, the Lord in the heart. So when Pariksit Maharaj hears this, he wants to know, well, what if one can't do this and just meditate on the Lord within the heart? And let me see here what he says. Well, first, at the end of his description, Shukadeva Goswami says, O King, by this system of remembrance and by being fixed in the habit of seeing the all-good personal conception of the Lord, one can very soon attain devotional service to the Lord under his direct shelter. So he's certainly proposing meditation on the Supersoul and direct devotional service. So then King Pariksit asks, O Brahmana, please describe in full detail how and where the mind has to be applied and how the conception can be fixed so that the dirty things in a person's mind can be removed. So the idea here is, Pariksit Maharaj is saying, it's not so easy to meditate like this. We all have so much contamination. An ordinary materialist can't just sit down by himself in some place and practice Ashtanga Yoga and come to this high level of realization. So then he begins to describe how you should meditate on the universal form. That's the context of the universal form in the second chapter. He says, okay, maybe it's hard to do this. Well, at least you can, maybe it's hard to go within, but at least within you can think of what you know on the outside and transform it, connect it to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the idea. And then again, in the there are many verses actually in the about the Virat Rupa in the Bhagavatam, because it comes up in several places. Again, as I said, and I think it's in the fifth chapter of the second canto. Then again, I think it's the fifth chapter of the third canto where Maitreya speaks about it. Then in the 26th chapter of the third canto, Kapila Dev talks about the universal form again. So anyway, it comes up repeatedly. So then here's just a few notes of things that caught my attention I thought were interesting. I'll just mention these. The Kaustubha, now we heard about the Kaustubha gem here actually, but Vishwanath Chakravarti gives a little added insight. He says, the Kaustubha gem hangs from his neck, Lord Vishnu's neck, or the Lord's neck, by a gold string. He knows that. And then he says, this is from the purport of 2210, Vishwanath's purport commentary. He said, having spoken of the limbs, now the ornaments are described. So apparently this progression also comes up earlier in the Bhagavatam we were reading about today, the four things that were being described about the universal form. So from limbs, then the ornaments. So there's a progression in the meditation. So it says here, actually it also said in the verse today, the Kaustubha represents the Lord's vibhuti known as the pure jiva. So it's interesting this word is used, the vibhuti, the Lord's opulence. The vibhutis, of course, are kind of incarnation of the Lord. The avesh avatars, there's shaktyavesh and vibhuti. So the vibhuti, the opulences of the Lord. So the jivas, they're represented by the Kaustubha. And Vishwanath Chakravarti, in commenting on this, he quotes a verse of where Krishna was speaking with Durvasa Muni, and he says, the saints are my heart, and I am the saints' heart, and they're in my heart, and I'm in their heart. So he said that, therefore, it's fitting that the Kaustubha is considered representation of the jivas, because they're in Krishna's heart. So another little something here, it says, the effulgence of the Kaustubha. Now, this was also kind of mentioned here, which I thought was interesting. I'm not quite sure what it means, but it says, this is from Vishwanath, the effulgence of the Kaustubha, which spreads everywhere, is the Sri Vatsa on the Lord's right upper chest. So the Sri Vatsa is the effulgence of the Kaustubha. I think it said that here today also. Anyway, I won't look it up. It'll take me a while. But so then it says, this means the Sri Vatsa is a fine curl of white hair whirling clockwise. Whirling. I think twirling maybe is the word. This is Bhanu Maharaj's translation. Not that it's spinning around, but it turns clockwise. On the right, the Lord's right upper chest, that's where the Sri Vatsa is. So the Kaustubha hangs from his neck on a gold thread. Then on his right upper chest is a curl of white hair. Then it says, Vishwanath says, this supports his vibhuti called dharma. So the Sri Vatsa represents dharma. Then he says, though not mentioned, in whatever verse he's commenting on the Lord's left chest is the Lakshmi Rekha, a golden line similar to the line on a testing stone. So we have Sri Vatsa. This is interpreted in different ways. Sometimes I've seen it, it's mentioned in the shape of a calf, but because the word Vatsa is there, which means calf. But here it's, and I've seen it also in other places, I think the standard definition is that it's a curl of hair. Maybe it curls in the form of a calf. But anyway, so then the golden line. So there's also a golden line. Because the Lord, why does it say like a gold testing stone? What is a gold testing stone? It's black. That stone, sometimes called a touchstone. So when you rub gold on it, if it's gold, really gold, then it leaves a gold line on the black stone. So that's the idea. That's what it looks like. Krishna's black chest, or darkish blue, sham-colored chest, and then you have the gold line there that represents Lakshmi Devi. So it's said that the Lakshmi is always on the chest of the Lord. My last class I was talking about how when the Lord appears or the great personalities appear, they often have their entourage. So when Lord Vishnu appears, sometimes it's said, and Lakshmi was situated on the chest of the Lord. And I think, oh. What does that mean? You know, you can imagine maybe piggyback, you know. But what does it mean? She's situated on the chest of the Lord. So, well, this is one way. Of course, these things are all, you know, beyond our imagination. What can one perceive in these multi dimensions of the Lord's existence? So the Lord appears. It doesn't seem like she's, you know, he's holding her up somehow, clinging to the front of him in Lakshmi, but somehow she's there, and so this, of course, can be one way. She's represented by that line on the Lord's chest, and the devotees see Lakshmi. When they see this line, they see Lakshmi. And, of course, she is there. She is there, present in that form. All right, I'll stop here. Any discussion? Sita Dee Prabhu.
Could that last, I didn't catch the whole thing, but is it possible that last reference to Lakshmi and the Lord may have something to do with the nature of their relationship? How they're connected?
Yes, well, that's true. She's always the nature of their relationship. She's also close to his heart, so she's always on his chest.
Yeah, it might be.
Of course, we often hear sometimes that Lakshmi is always at the feet of the Lord. She's always massaging his feet.
Yeah, it's like, these days, we say, oh, so-and-so has someone in their heart.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know.
Yeah, well, that's definitely true. I was mentioning that in my last class also. In fact, it seems, it's interesting, because just like we use the word heart, actually we use it in many ways. We say the heart of the matter, but when we talk about heart, we talk about feeling, we talk about emotion. But we use the same word to refer to the organ of the heart. So it seems to be that way in the Sanskrit also. That the heart, the actual physical organ, is called hridayam. But hridayam also means, you know, the heart, our inner self, our emotional self, and so on. So she's certainly situated close to his heart in that sense. Dharmaraj?
You mentioned about Sri Vatsa Dharma, just in a little bit. Can you describe that a little bit more, or what's the symbol of that?
Well, I think of it just as a curl, and it curls to the right, clockwise, and not counterclockwise. That's the idea. Now, Bhanuswami used the word whirling, but when something's whirling, it means it's spinning around. So I don't think he used the right word. I think he meant, you know, just twisting. I've seen it translated that, or curling. It's curling clockwise, and not counterclockwise. That's the idea. Of course, clockwise is always considered auspicious. We always circumambulate clockwise and so on.
Hare Krishna. Isn't the word whirl used specifically for hair? Like everybody has a point on their head where, you know, it's coming sort of in a circle.
That's called the twirl?
Yeah.
Oh. No, yeah, W-H-I.
So maybe that's the mistake, but I think it's specifically referring to circular growth of hair.
Yeah, could be.
I don't know which.
I mean, the way I've read it in other places, and it seems to me it's just, just like if you cut some child's one curl, sometimes people say their child's hair, right? So you have one little curl of hair, so that might be the idea. Maybe it's not just one thread of hair, it could be a bunch of hair.
Yeah.
But it does twist clockwise, that's the idea.
Yeah, it's definitely circular. That's the meaning of, well, I don't know which spelling.
Madhumati? Oh, Bhagavati. Right.
Hare Krishna. We had a little discussion last night, some of us reading Bhagavad Gita, about some of the things you mentioned. Pradhan and the Mahatattva, and I was sort of remembering from about 30 years ago taking a class in Mayapur from Tamal Krishna Goswami and on Brahma Samhita. And what I thought I remembered, and maybe you could clarify, it was something about the Pradhan being... I thought of it as like a... like an undifferentiated spiritual oneness, and then somehow time agitated it, and it became the Mahatattva.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Nothing happens without time. So Krishna's vision of time. Well, actually, the one thing about these aspects of creation, they're described differently in different places. In fact, I just read, you know, we hear that the Lord, you know, the Mahavishnu, he rested on the pradhan in one corner of the universe, and then he glanced at material nature.
Okay.
So that material nature, that glance is sometimes taken to be synonymous with time. That's how he activated. Of course, we also hear that that's how he injected material nature with the jivas, was by his glance.
And that the glance is Shambhu. Or Shambhu is the glance.
Yes, the Brahma Samhita, Brahma Samhita is very difficult to understand. Shambhu is a manifestation of the Lord, or a manifestation of the Lord's glance.
And then we were also remembering the other day when Sri Devi said that time is like one of the spokes or axles on the sun god's chariot. It was a little bewildering, actually.
Yeah, with the sun god, because our time is measured by the rising and setting of the sun. So it's natural to think of the sun in relationship to time. So, he makes time, in a sense, visible to us. The passing of time is visible to us, just as the sun is visible to us. So in a sense, time, which is invisible, it's Krishna, but we can see it in a certain sense because we see the rising and setting of the sun. So it would be natural to have the sun representing time in a certain aspect.
Another thing, I'm remembering, towards the end of the class, and you were talking about those three vibhutis, was it? The kriya,
yes.
and the, Jnana, Kriya,
and Dravya, Jnana, and Kriya.
So two of them you associated with the modes of material nature, and I was wondering whether the other one, because it's in
yes, well,
the
Jnana
material,
would go with
might
sattva.
That be the mode of ignorance? Just
Jnana
the,
would go
the
with
raw
sattva
material?
Guna. Dravya, well, I didn't. That would mean that what's interesting, actually, we hear that in the creation as it unfolds, we hear that, in fact, the question of the acharyas have commented on this, that is it this? What's the first thing? The ahankar. Ahankar actually comes by the transformation of the motive. Ignorance, I think it is. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And now I forget how then when. Anyway, all of these different principles of material nature, they all intertwine. But I know there's some, you know, the idea is that, well, why would ignorance, because ignorance doesn't, nothing happens with ignorance. That's why I think there's some confusion. So to have ignorance mixed with ahankar, then how can anything grow from that? Because everything grows, you might say, everything starts happening because of ahankar. So it comes first. So you would think that, well, maybe, you know, sattva-gun or raja-gun would come first, but actually it doesn't.
But another thing that we remembered was that the very first thing that Lord Brahma creates is self-deception.
Yeah.
So that goes with ahankara.
Yes,
right?
Well, that's true. And of course, that because of that ignorance also, you can say everything is going on, at least everything is going on in the material world in the sense that it's inspiring our action. But still, Rajagun has to be there, otherwise you don't do anything. Okay, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.